So today I'm going to be talking about standardized reporting in general, but in particular is how it relates to cancer registry work. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background of cancer reporting, what the cancer checklists are, what our task force that we've created is, and then talk a little bit how we went from a paper-based system into a electronic format. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with pathology reporting for cancer, but it is a critical data source for public health reporting, and cancer registries do derive a lot of their information from the reports that come out of pathology. Traditionally, cancer reports are narrative. We call them Shakespearean prose, and they can go on and on and on. The problem with that is that cancer registries then have to manually extract the data from that. The report content can vary from pathologist to pathologist, and even within a practice, different pathologists can use different terms meaning the same thing, because a lot of diagnoses do have synonyms to them. So any kind of encoding then that's done in a paper-based system has to be retrospective and manual. So this is an actual example from a mastectomy pathology report from 1979. As you can see, there's only three elements that pertain to the actual mastectomy and the cancer there, and the fourth one was actually an extraction of a tooth. But today's cancer reports, there's an explosion of the required data that has to be reported for essential data for essential patient care, and we call it an information overload in the pathology part. There's really aren't pathologists today who can remember all the essential data elements that have to be put on a pathology report for every kind of cancer that there is. So we have tried to develop a system for them to help them and assist them in that. Oh, and actually, by the way, I'm from the College of American Pathologists, so we're actually the ones who are creating these for our members, too. There is a need then for a more structured sign-out process that will establish a consistent way to collect this information, not only for primary patient care, but for any of the secondary uses of it too. And obviously by doing something like this and standardizing it, it will improve quality. So this today is an actual mastectomy report on a cancer, breast cancer, from 2009. So as you can see, we had those three elements before. These again are done in an elemental form, but here's page one, here's page two, here's page three, and then here's the comments section. So in order to remember all that kind of information that has to be put on a report, a pathologist does need some kind of a guideline. Especially pathologists who aren't used to seeing some of the cancers that are out there, if they're not specialized in a particular area, they do need some kind of assistance to remember to report all of these elements. So what we did is the CAP Cancer Committee develop these guidelines of what are called the essential data elements that are needed in all of the site-specific cancers. The content is derived from the CAP Cancer Committee, therefore it's pathologist-driven. And the value of the checklists is that they are a professional standard that has been promulgated by responsible professional organizations. So when the Cancer Committee sits down to write these, they don't write them in isolation. They write them with the surgeons, the radiation oncologists, and all the other members. And then they also sit on their committees, too, that are doing structured reporting for their specialties. This is definitely an aid to cancer registry surveillance reporting, because it now has shown that these cancer checklists do provide all the information that is needed for the cancer registries that can come out of pathology. Of course, cancer registries derive information from other places too, but it usually starts within the pathology department. The analogy we like to use is that it's essential, the data items are essential when the cost of missing something critical is high. So if you're missing an essential data element from a pathology report, that can adversely affect patient care. So we want to make sure that all of that information is being collected. And for those of you who have never seen a cancer checklist, this is just an example. Whoops. This is just an example of what one looks like just in a paper-based form that are on the CAP website that you're more you're free to go and look at any of them. So this, what we've done here, this is an example of a cancer checklist that we've kind of mocked up into a nice user interface. This is just an example of a thyroid. This is a gross picture of a thyroid. So this would be used for when a pathologist diagnoses a thyroid cancer. So the value of the cancer checklist is that they do standardize meeting. They are an effective communication tool. And the most important thing is they're composed of individual data elements. We now, in the past, instead of going from that narrative, which of course you can always do natural language processing, processing on, but we now can collect these as discrete data elements in some kind of a database. They are global in use. We have other countries besides the US who are using them. In fact, the Royal College of Australasia Pathologists now has a member who sits on the CAP Cancer Committee too. Sometimes you'll hear them called synoptic reports, summary of a report, checklist. They all really means the same thing. So the primary motivation of doing this, of course, is to improve patient care. They can now be used as part of the decision support service in that the calculation of stage can be a business rule that's written right into the checklist. And then it can also help to identify patients for specific clinical trials. However, there is a lot of secondary use for these. And when pathologists fill these out, they do understand that this is data that is going to be entered once but reused multiple times for many different kinds of information. It can certainly be used for research, for clinical practice, for public health and cancer surveillance, even for reimbursement and quality assurance within the different departments. So the usabilities of these are related, but they're not identical. And it's important to remember that because depending on what your use case is going to do, probably depend on the kind of terminology or coding system that you're going to use so that you can go from the actual path report to whatever your use case is, but you probably can't go backwards. So what we did is, while the Cancer Committee has published these, they only publish them in a Word document or a PDF. They aren't interested in putting this into electronic format, but we at the college are, because we work with a lot of the, well, with all the laboratory information system vendors, and we want to be able to collect these as discrete data elements. So of course, I'm preaching to the choir, but the difficulty with using a paper-based system is that it's hard to compare across the checklist. There can be coding errors, and we have shown that this does happen. A lot of times in pathology, it's actually the transcriptionist or the secretary even who will apply codes to those data elements. The transference of documents can be difficult. Certainly, paper-based is not a computer-readable format unless you're storing it as a text blob. And implementation can be difficult for each of the vendors to try to go from a paper-based into an electronic format. So what we did is we created the Pathology Electronic Reporting Task Force, or PERT, whose mission is to advance the implementation of the CAP Cancer Checklist using health information technology. The members are pathologists, cancer registrars. You can see all the people who are there. Actually, my next slide will show you who they are. This is a collaborative effort. We do receive funding from the CDC to do this. And we also work with other agencies, such as the North American Association of Central Cancer Registries, Cancer Care Ontario, and a number of other organizations. These are the members of PERT today. Dr. John Madden is a pathologist from Duke University, and he's our chair, as is Monica DeBaca, who is a pathologist from South Dakota. You can see we have a number of different people on here, both pathologists, cancer registrars, health scientists. We even have a radiation oncologist or pediatric oncologist on here too. So what we did is we wanted to overcome barriers to implementation, transmission, and ensure a widespread adoption of these checklists. We wanted to establish consistent collection of the information, and it was very important for us that the discrete data items can be collected and coded. Clinicians have shown that they actually prefer this way of receiving the information in a synoptic type of a checklist as opposed to pages and pages of narrative. It does ease or eliminate a coding process because we actually do provide the correct SNOMED code to these discrete data elements. It can, as I've mentioned before, it's a cancer surveillance aid and its structure is extensible. So one of the things that we did is when we first went from creating this to a paper to electronic format, we didn't think of it just in terms of cancer registry and cancer checklists. We wanted to make this as extensible and scalable as possible. So we looked at the bigger picture of structured reporting in general. And we decided to use then this cancer reporting as a use case as to our structured reporting process and our structured reporting XML documents and schemas that we've created. But to begin with, when we first started doing this, here's an example of a margin section from a cancer checklist, and you would ask yourself, well, what's wrong with this? And to a pathologist filling it out, there's actually nothing wrong with it. If you're just filling it out on paper, you just check, and you know what it is. But to a computer, there's actually a lot of problems here. The computer, unless you tell it, doesn't know that it's a question-answer set, and what is the question? It can't tell you that if you PIC cannot be assessed, all these others are invalid. And even the adenoma absent and present, you have to understand it depends on the kind of resection that there is for that particular specimen. So there's a lot of business rules that have to be written into this, kind of if-then type of statements. Again, it can't effectively process the free text and still allow data mining. So we have to make sure that each one of these are discrete elements that can be captured. It can be subject to paper-based spellings and misspellings, and to date we still find errors in the paper-based cancer checklist that the Cancer Committee does, so we have to kind of go back and change some of those too. So then today what we've done is we've gone from putting them into some kind of database into our latest release, which was in January, where we took that and then exported it into an XML format. We picked XML, of course, because it's a portable, exchangeable format, readily adopted. It has a structured electronic document that we also send with it where the information can be exchanged, and it's obviously endorsed by the main standards organizations. XML then does allow us to do the mappings. A vendor then can customize it for their product. It's one of the things vendors do is they all want it to look different because that's part of their proprietary information. And then, like I've mentioned before, it's extensible to other structured reporting applications in public health. We're actually using it for an immunization type of registry too, and like a rare disease registry. So the structure itself that we've created, we do think can be used for any kind of structured reporting within public health. So this is just to give you an example for those of you who like to look at XML. This is how we release it. This is our XML format. This is just an actual instance of the XML. I'm sure you can all read that. And we also release this is really for the vendors when they go to implement it. The vendors just don't have an understanding of what parts belong with what. And so even though we try to be real careful in matching questions and answers and everything, just to be sure, we kind of give them a visual guide of what it should look like, what belongs with what in there. This isn't meant to be released or anything. It's really just a guide for them. And then also what we do is we actually layer SNOMED on top of it, on top of the XML in a separate file so that they actually then would have all the SNOMED codes for these particular cancer checklists. So where are we going with this? Actually, the CAP Cancer Committee decided this past year that because there's a new staging system out from the American College of Surgeons, that they were going to rewrite all of the cancer checklists. So in this past year, they've written 78 new cancer checklists based on this new staging system. We are in the process now. They're actually just finalizing them. It will be on the CAP website in October. We're taking those, again, paper-based, and putting them into a database and then exporting the XML from that. What we also are going to do is we will have the SNOMED CT for it. I don't know how many of you are aware of it, but SNOMED CT, don't shoot the messenger, actually started at the CAP 50 years ago. And so we've developed it over the years until we sold it about 3 years ago to the International Healthcare Terminology Standards Development Organization, which is based in Denmark. And then the US, of course, is a member of that. So we are still the support organization for SNOMED, so we actually are the ones who still put the content into SNOMED, and then we do the releases that are sent out then too. So we have to get a lot of new codes for the new cancer checklist. There is a time frame there, so we probably won't have them all done in time for our next XML release of it. We do continue to get funding from the CDC on this parts of the project that we're working on here, and we look towards the PERT for continued support and guidance on how to do these, especially the pathologists and the cancer registrars. They really help us with trying to define what some of the elements are that the cancer registrars might need to their site specific, and then the pathologists kind of help us if we go into something that we're not sure exactly how this would relate to this because it doesn't make sense, and they kind of clarify that for us. We do have regularly scheduled releases of this, and of course we are concerned about version control of the different checklists too. So I just wanted to end with this slide. This is our vision of the future and where we're going with this. This is our XML document model architecture, and Wendy's also going to talk a little bit of parts of this too. How we envision it is instead of modeling the cancer checklist into a database and exporting it into XML. We're actually starting to model it directly into XML. So that what we do is we use a method schema, which would be the procedure, and then a site of where the tumor is. And those are the two things that we link together to bring over the different kinds of modules within the XML schemas that you would need for the different kind, for that particular kind of cancer and that particular kind of procedure and site. We are building business rules into it too. Whoops, over here. And that's actually part of the data model. So that the report, the XML schema, is the database. So the report is the database. We're no longer relying on a database to store the report, will become its own database. So then what we do is we're going to have transforms so that we'll release the XML, the cancer checklist, the structured reporting, and then we'll have overlays to SNOMED, to RADLUX, to LOING, to any of the other terminologies. We'll probably in our technical preview that we're releasing with the next version of the checklist, we probably will just do a mapping transform to SNOMED at this point. We also envision that we will be able to do transforms, so you can put it into CDA, HL7V2, or any of the other kinds of formats that you want. And lastly, we do intend to release some kind of a user interface, whether that's XForms or InfoPath, whichever way, any way you want. And then at the bottom of that slide, which I'm pretty sure are going to be on the website, we're doing this in a Google code, so it's really open. We would like people to go in and look at it. If you want to comment on that, we can give you permission to actually do some of the editing and comment on that too. So we really do envision, we're trying to move more and more towards semantic web on this, and so while we're still releasing it, we'll always release in at least XML. The future is that we'll release it in this new format. So with that then, I wanted to give it over to Wendy Blumenthal, who will be doing the second part of this presentation. Thank you.